For comic's sake, this is Volume 1, Issue 25. For comic's sake on iTunes.
At For Comic's Sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For comic's sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
Rated Max for explicit content not approved by the Comics Code Authority. Previously on For Comic's Sake. 8 months ago, Anthony ran into Man-Thing and got trapped inside his own sword.
Ryan got punched in the face so hard that his skull enlarged 10 times its normal size.
I'm Anthony, and I'll be talking spoilers for Inhumans vs. X-Men number 0, Old Man Logan number 14, and Extraordinary X-Men number 16.
And I'm Ryan. I'll be talking about Great Lakes Avengers number 2 and the Batman Annual number 1.
Excellent. Starting off with Inhumans vs. X-Men number 0. This issue sets the stage for the upcoming Inhumans vs. X-Men mega event. Learn who the major players will be, plus the seeds of the incredible plan that will unfold in IVX number 1. Beast and Iso travel the world to learn a desperate truth. The X-Men assemble their ranks, and the Inhumans prepare for the war to come. It all begins with one choice. See it here. This comic is written, or hear it here if you didn't see it here. This comic is written by Charles Soule, art by Kenneth Rocafort, colors by Dan Brown, and letters Clayton Cowles. 8 months ago, this was when Secret Wars ended. The whole Marvel Universe jumped 8 months ahead.
Oh.
And we just jumped into the fact that the Terrigen Mist was out there, and that mutants were dying while Inhumans were being born, and we just knew there was this rift between all of them, and but we never knew what would happen in those 8 months' time. The Death of X series was just wrapped up, which was just a 4-issue mini, which bleeds into this. So one event leads into another event, which leads into that event.
It's almost like they're planning this out.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. Because IVX will lead into like X-Men Resurrection that's coming out in spring. But
Jesus. How far ahead do they plan this stuff?
At least
years,
a year.
I mean, yeah.
At least a year, I think. Because, they do their Marvel retreat, and then they all be like, all right, let's talk about this coming, forthcoming year. So now we are finally going back 8 months ago to figure out how all this stuff had started to happen. Beast and Iso are working on curing this Terrigen poison. So, when we had jumped 8 months ahead, Beast was hanging out with the Inhumans, so he had, like, cross-eyes, but, like, he didn't, like, turn on the X-Men, but he was working, and he's been studying this thing, and we kind of see that after Death of X, they kind of, like, agreed on that, like, Beast would lend his expertise to, with the Inhuman technology and try to, like, figure out a cure for all this stuff to make sure that more X-Men don't die and everything. So Beast has been kind of your, like, middle ground.
Sure.
The guy that's been, you know, playing for both
teams. That's your boy, isn't it?
Beast? Beast boy, yep. love me some Beast. And you get an awesome rendition of him here in, because you get many different kinds of Beast throughout the decades, depending who's drawing them, and this is the kind of Beast I'm into. That's out there.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. So Beast and Iso are working together because she's one of the smart Inhumans, he's one of the smart mutants. Then we see Emma training her powers. Emma Frost is kind of going through and we just see her on a cliff, and she's looking at the gravesite of Scott Summers. Now, Death of X is wrapped up. If you aren't you don't read this unless you've read Death of X, basically. The quick thing is that Scott Summers was the biggest fatality out of Death of X. He had come across the Terrigen Mist. He had died. Emma Frost used some illusions to make it seem that he didn't die. So, like, throughout the 4 issues, you don't find out till the way at the end that actually he had died in the first issue. And, like, she was covering it up with her, just with her powers, basically.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of crazy that, like, she used that to make it seem that Black Bolt killed Scott Summers in the final page of Death of X. Because Black Bolt screamed, killed Scott Summers, but technically that wasn't him, and he had already died 4 issues prior. Basically, she's the evil person of this whole thing. She manipulated everyone's mind into thinking that the Inhumans just killed Scott Summers, basically. And we see her jumping off a cliff, and it's just like, whoa, what's going on here? She's don't know what she's doing. And basically what she's doing, she's testing her power. She's clocking just like the time, like getting to the ground and like how much she can like turn into her crystallized form and stuff, and how quickly she can do that. And basically she's preparing for a war, mm-hmm. is what's going on here. This comic continually catches up to current time, so it started 8 months ago, and then it cuts to 6 months ago, and we see that the Terrigen Cloud is shrinking. So they're kind of figuring out how to kind of stop this from happening, and that's kind of what's happening in this during... Like, it's crazy that we get 8 months of, like, story in this one-issue comic of way it's just kind of catching up. That would have been cool if they had done it, like, you know, 8 months ago was one comic, seven months ago was the next comic, and, you know... They could have got more money.
That could be your own idea.
That'll be
the future comic.
That'll be the next thing.
There you go.
They just milked it all on one issue. They could have got much more monies from me. Then we see the Crystal and the team is helping to prevent mutants from getting into the cloud. So Crystal is one of the Inhumans. She's working. She has a team. Her and the Inhuman teams are trying their best to scan mutants and get them out of the way before this cloud hits their area and then eventually kills them. So you see that they're doing good. It's not just, even though it's IVX, this is all the 8 months leading up to what eventually, and I'm assuming the war, like, takes place in present time. So it's a trippy way to tell a story here, but it's also very intriguing to see how this all developed during this time. And then we have Magneto and Emma Frost, who are sharing a beverage, and they're sharing some wine, and they're kind of talking strategy. They're preparing. So with when you got Magneto involved, then you know shit's about to get real, basically. But Emma, in a lot of people's minds, Emma's probably the more sinister of the two, if you will. So, because you never know. Just, you know, she's good, she's bad.
Yeah.
You know, Magneto, I mean, he's always fighting. You know, he's working on the good side every now and then too. But I think you always get the vibe that that he's generally bad, while she is just kind of very shifty.
Okay.
4 months ago, Emma is recruiting young X-Men. She's talking with the... This is where it gets even crazier. The young X-Men from the past, who are now living in the present. So you're young Iceman, you're young Beast, and she's just kind of talking to them, and just... Oh, and young Cyclops. So it's crazy that, you know, current Cyclops is dead. Young Cyclops is... in the current. That's what X-Men does, you know, all this jumping around. 2 months ago, Beast tells Medusa that they have to find individual cures for mutants. So that was actually a pretty big reveal. We see Medusa's hanging out on her throne. Beast has some unfortunate information of that it's not as easy to just be like, all right, all the mutants are going to be fine. I came up with a cure that when they get through the cloud, that they're going to be good.
It's going to be individual.
Yeah, it's so specific that he has to now... It seems impossible. Being like, okay, I have to figure out what your powers are and how this... And like, it just seems like a crazy task. So yeah, that was actually a pretty crazy reveal there. And it kind of left Beast sitting there, and he was kind of just... kind of, you know, almost regretting the work that's ahead of him. But then he is overhearing some shit. He overheard that Medusa is telling Black Bolt that they have to be ready for a fight. So it's crazy to think that, like, Medusa, you know, wants to make sure everything's good, but she's also covering her ass and her people by saying, yeah, we just have to be ready to fight because it's going to happen, you know, just in case. And for Beast to overhear that, just being like, you know, we're trying to work together here, but your side is preparing to fight. And while also, you know, they don't know that Emma Frost and Magneto are also basically doing the same thing. But when Beast overhears that, that probably doesn't sit too well for him. And then this is a moment I liked, because being a fan of the Extraordinary X-Men series, this is when Limbo, X-Haven happens. So with the Terrigen Mist going through, hitting all the mutants, X-Haven, at the start of Extraordinary X-Men, Storm and her X-Men team, in order to save their lives, they take the remaining X-Men, they go into Limbo, and they create their own. That's where they take the school, the Professor Xavier School for Gifted Children. Basically, now they're safe from the Cloud, but also they're removed from all of humanity itself, and they even refer to it as they're basically hiding. And that was actually something that was in Extraordinary X-Men, which I'll get to later, that with them being in Limbo, they're just like, all right, we have to X-Man up, if you will.
Sure.
And, you know, just get out there and start fighting again. But it was cool to kind of see that development, because I've been reading Extraordinary X-Men for 16 issues now, so now it's cool to get a little precursor on what led to that eventually. And then finally, while we're in X-Haven, and we have the school, we got Storm there, and this is when Emma Frost comes in, and she's ready to talk to Storm, and Emma says that she's there to save the day. So she goes up to Storm, who is leading the X-Men, and is just like, you know what? I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to save everything. And we already knew a couple pages back how her and Magneto are preparing for this war. She's got some shiftiness going on, and which I shouldn't use that term, because Mystique is the one that's got the shiftiness, if you will.
Okay.
The shape shiftiness. Sure. But yeah, anyways, that is your zero issue leading into Inhumans vs. X-Men, which comes out in 1 week at the time of this recording. But yeah, I think it's a six-issue limited series, and then it should go right into the Resurrection for X-Men, and then all the X-Men get their solo titles and stuff like that.
So the solo titles are going to be after the... Next.
I believe so, because okay. I haven't pre-ordered any yet.
Are you going to be picking all those up, you think? Or it's hard?
I want to say I'm going to do all of the number ones.
Yeah, just to see.
But before I even get to read those number ones, I would essentially have to pre-order twos and threes. I may only do that for Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Like, she's the one I'm really focused on. So I'm not sure if Beast has one or not. I forget who all has them. But I think if Crimson Call orders the other ones, that I may wait to read all of them first and be like,
yeah,
all right, I'll pick up second issue if they naturally order it. And then if I like it there, then I can be just like, okay, order these. But there might be one or two that I'll do definitely that I'll dig
it
into.
It always depends what the creators are. Charles Soule is going to be doing a couple of them. Yeah. Well,
That is a big game changer, where I'd be like, okay, I'll take all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I'll do all the number ones at least just to have them. And
something to look forward to.
Yeah, so.
There you go.
Heads up to my wallet there when it comes to Resurrection. But yeah, it was pretty fun, and I liked it. And you got the Inhumans, you got the X-Men. I'm a guy who just loves good storytelling.
It's been a long time since I've read an X-Men book. It really has been. Yeah, I'm going to have to jump on one coming up here sometime.
My number one pick of the week is going to be the last book we talk about, and that's where I just go nuts, where I'm just like, damn,
awesome.
That's an X-Men book.
Awesome, looking forward to it.
So yeah, that was Inhumans versus X-Men, number zero.
All right, I'm going to be talking about Great Lakes Avengers, number two. The Great Lakes Avengers are back together, almost. With their former leader, Mr. Immortal, still buried alive, out in the middle of nowhere, the group struggles to find their footing under the uncertain guidance of Flatman. After a confrontation with some noisy supervillain neighbors lands the entire team in jail, it's all he can do to keep them together. We've got writer Zach Gorman, artist Will Robinson, color artist is Tamara Bonvillain, and then we have letterer Joe Karma Magna. Yes. I feel like you know that name for some reason.
I've seen it a lot in a lot of my books.
But I thought I wanted to make this podcast a little bit more serious, so I thought I'd pick the Great Lakes Avengers.
We gotta get down and gritty.
It's something about reading a book where, you know, I didn't know anything about the Great Lakes Avengers, really. But, you know, we live in the region, so there is absolutely no way I was going to be passing this up at all.
Flatman was playing video games online just near, like, an hour away from
us. Yeah, I know. It was, it's just those little things that they throw in the book that can kind of make you geek out a little bit. But this book, of course, takes place in Detroit. And right before, so if you remember, they do land themselves in jail, and you kind of get the... kind of what led up to it, because they were at kind of like this nightclub, and some shit went down with a new character that were introduced, this devil guy. I forget his name offhand right now. But if you remember, Big Bertha is the one that started the shit, and there ends up being this huge fucking brawl. Like, look at this. It's kind of funny because you see her. She's like, I don't know. 7 or 8 times the size of this villain that we're introduced to. And all she goes, she says, "I hope you got good insurance, pal." That's her line that she uses.
Yeah, because there was like a bunch of like noise like across the street and they're trying to sleep. So then she just went over there and just started kicking ass.
Exactly. So then also we cut away to the hospital where we see... there's a character, girl? Yeah, there's a character that was attacked at the end of the last issue, and we see, you know, I feel kind of bad that I can't remember her name offhand.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I just called her Werewolf Girl.
Girl, yellow shirt, blue hair, we see her, and, so we're kind of getting caught up to everybody.
They refer to her as Good Boy, because on the front they have their mug shots there, and like, is she the?
I don't. According to that, it would be Good Boy.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you have Flatman, Big Bertha, Doorman.
And you got the blue hair and then the blue werewolf, so maybe she's just referred to as Good Boy.
I guess so. But now we are also with Mr. Immortal, who is living underneath ground, and we find out in this issue that he actually put himself there on purpose.
Yes.
And he has one of his buddies that has a tube down that's pouring him water to keep him alive, and he's like kind of struggling with the fact that he could... He's trying to convince him that he wants to get out, but he made his friend promise him that, no, absolutely not, I'm not going to do that. So we're now in jail with the crew, and Doorman senses something, and he just decides, you know, he's in jail, he just decides that he doesn't want to be in jail anymore.
I like how he says, "Tell the guard I'll be back soon." Yeah, like 10 minutes.
Tops. And he like phases out of the door, like he doesn't, you know, he doesn't need to be there. And then we are at we're still at the police station, and then we have our character that we're introduced to the last issue, the werewolf girl, or
I'm gonna go with good boy.
Okay. So. Good boy, comes to the jail with. Well, I'm under the pressure to break them out. But they don't really need to be broken out at all, because Big Bertha, all she does is tears the bars apart with her hands, and then we have Flatman that just kind of wiggles through the doorway. I just think it's funny how these guys are locked up, but they absolutely cannot keep them there. Yeah,
like, all three of them could easily leave.
Yeah, exactly. So... we have the Great Lakes Avengers with Good Boy. I keep looking back on the front cover. For whatever reason, I can't remember that name.
Good Boy.
Good Boy. And they are together. And we have the lawyer that is pretty upset with everything that is going on. Because I don't think she wants them to really be involved with anything. I think she just kind of wants them to... hang out in the back and not really do anything. So this is when, if you don't think it's crazy enough, we have a shot of Mr. Immortal, and he has a plug, like a cork, that's on the tube thing that's going into like his coffin or whatever, and you see him just gasping for breath. So he quick takes it away, and then all of a sudden someone is fucking in this casket with him, and it's Doorman. I laughed my fucking ass off when I was reading this. Yeah. And Doorman is trying to say, "Hey, we need you. We need you to come out." And, you know, Mr. Immortal's saying, "No, I can't." And then, you know, he's trying to find out why. And he's saying that, "Well, I put myself in here." He did that for himself. And you turn the page, and just like that, he's not in the casket anymore, because poor man, like, grabs him, and he, like, phases him out of it. And, it was, oh god, it was so fucking funny how he did it.
And then Doorman makes a comment about what it smelled like in there. He goes, it smelled like somebody was fermenting cabbage in an 8th grade gym locker.
yeah, that's right, because he actually goes about it for a while, about how you must have been used to the smell, because you were in there for so long. But yeah, that's just, that, yeah, I like that. So, we're back at the prison now. And the lawyer's in there, and you got some serious. I'm trying to remember now. It's been a while since I read this. Yeah, I knew you were gonna do that.
I tried not to.
I know. That's another podcast.
Oh yeah, AB Conversation, yes. On iTunes.
That one. I'm trying to remember here.
Yeah, I don't remember what's happening in the court scene, but I think the big thing at the end is basically when you when you see a shadow come out of a, you know, waiting for a limousine door that's open.
Is that, I'm trying to remember now, the person that is leaving, so this, like, this guy right here, as he's leaving, is he like, turns into, yeah, so he turns
I didn't even put that together.
Yeah.
Oh, because isn't this the councilman or something?
Yeah.
He's the councilman?
So he's walking out of the courtroom.
Okay, that I didn't even put together until right now.
You got a guy waiting in a limo, he opens the door, he sits in the back, and, like, the driver looks... And we just have, I think I need to blow off a little steam, because he wants to go back downtown, but it's that same devil villain that was in the nightclub / bar at the beginning of the issue.
Okay, yeah, I guess I didn't put it together that was the same thing there. So
we have all these new characters. They're not new to the Marvel Universe, but they are very much new to the Marvel Universe as we know it now. You know, are they ever going to be a part of any crossover events? You never know.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in going through. I didn't read these yet, but I saw at the
letters.
End. Yeah, but I see at the end they say the Great Lakes Avengers still needs more applicants, and there's people applying to be in the Great Lakes Avengers.
Okay.
And I remember I took a screenshot of this because I wanted to remind myself to write, like, come up with a crazy thing.
And
submit it and see if I can get into the Great Lakes Avengers.
I think you should try, man.
Yeah, I was going to. So
they, you know, if we were, I think, oh god. You and I were talking. We were saying how long it was before the second Great Lakes issue came out.
Yeah,
because you were like, "Man, I don't understand." Like, yeah. Well, it kind of makes sense now because if they have these letters in here, they would have had to wait a whole another week or two before they even started printing this. So, because normally you don't see letters until like the third or fourth issue.
And I think there was like this weird, like one of those fifth week release, you know, of the month where they have that like fifth Wednesday or something. And so I think it like felt extra long because it, you know,
because 4 weeks is long enough.
I know, right?
But a fifth week. So, but yeah, no, this is a lot. This is a lot of fun. If you want something that's a little less serious and you want to laugh at some ridiculous characters, this is the book for you. So yeah, Great Lakes Avengers issue number 2.
Next up is Old Man Logan, number 14. Jubilee is missing. An all-new arc, Monster War, starts here! Logan will have to team up with the supernatural Howling Commandos to unravel the mystery of why Jubilee has disappeared. But is he prepared for what this investigation will uncover? Follow the old man to Romania and find out. This is written by Jeff Lemire, art by Felipe and... Andrade? And then color artist, Jordi Belair, and letters by Corey Petit. Last month's Old Man Logan felt like a series finale. That's how good that issue was. But it was not a series finale, thankfully, because this series has been constantly good. And what we jump into here is that we do get, even though the cover is done by the interior artist of the series so far, the Andrea Sorrentino. We do switch it up to Felipe for the interior art, which it was a big change for me because I was so used to that old man Logan style, which we saw in the Civil War number 7 we talked about last week.
I love that. Yep.
So now we have a different style in here, which I quickly adapted to. I really dug the old man Logan.
I could do better
version. Oh, you can?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
So yeah, what I like here is that now it's a fresh start. Old Man Logan, He existed in the future, 50 years in the future. He had, and then thanks to Secret Wars, he woke up in present time in the middle of Times Square, didn't know what the hell he was going on, and he wanted to make a hit list for all the people that eventually caused all of the shit to go down in the future. So he's like, you know what, I'm going to stop him now. I have an opportunity. I'm going to create a different future for myself by stopping these people that I know eventually went on. And he had created a hit list, and that's kind of what the first, like, 13 issues of the series kind of dealt with him dealing with the fact that he's now displaced in time. So this is the first issue that really just kind of, he's just kind of sitting there, and he's just like, you know, I'm here, let's do this. And he immediately gets a message from Cerebra, who is the good Sentinel that's working with the X-Men, who's been in the Extraordinary X-Men book. But Cerebra is basically telling Old Man Logan that somebody important is missing. Jubilee is missing. Jubilee being one of his apprentices, if you will, kind of like a Kitty Pryde. That's like in the movies, Rogue was his kind of like person that he looked over. And in the comics, it's been Jubilee, it's been Kitty Pryde, and they kind of have that kind of relationship. There was an issue of Miss Marvel in her first run, in her first five or six issues, where she was on a sewer mission and she ran into Wolverine. And she was so excited to, like, because he kind of, like, took her under his wing for that issue. And she got pretty excited that she's like, oh, my God, I'm working with Wolverine, you know, and, like, being taught by Wolverine. And so when anyone has that kind of teaching relationship with him. But, yeah, that's what leads into this here, is that Jubilee is missing. So Old Man Logan's like, all right, I have to go do something about it. He goes and retrieves Jubilee's baby, Shogo, and heads off to Romania, which is her last recorded location. So Shogo, in the X-Men title from a couple years ago, where it was the all-female X-Men team, I had picked up you know, a couple dozen of those issues.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. It was just called X-Men. Okay. But it was like focusing on the female X-Men. And she had a baby in that, Shogo, and I eventually dropped the title. I mean, I bought like 20 issues of the book, and eventually it got to the point where I didn't remember who all these people were because I kept bringing in these characters I wasn't familiar with. So I just got to that point where I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. But somehow, when I dropped it and to now picking it up, Jubilee is like a vampire, which was something that I have to read on and like figure out how that happened. But anyways, there is a cool little moment. I think I put this out in the tweets and the Instagram for comic's sake, where Shogo, the little baby, is picked up by Cerebra and has kind of a little adorable baby moment. Where Shogo taps the big giant, you know, giant robot and just boops him on the nose there. But anyways, Romania is the last recorded location for Jubilee. So Logan tells Cerebra, nobody else is coming along. I'm going to do this. I can handle this. And he goes to Romania. He gets teleported there by Cerebra. And I didn't know. Like, I looked at the cover, and I guess I have a tendency of looking at covers just enough to be like, all right, this is the comic I'm reading, to like not to look at it in detail after the issue, in case there's anything important in here. And this is one of those I was kind of glad I did. So he's traveling through. He's in like a jungle in Romania, and he gets quickly attacked. He's got this giant hand that grabs him. I'm like, oh, what's going on here? And I'm like, holy shit, it's Man-Thing.
Whoa.
The Man-Thing.
What the fuck?
Yeah, the Man-Thing, who I'll talk about later on after our spoiler-filled reviews.
There's no way you saw that coming at all.
No, I didn't. I looked right away at the cover. Yeah. Man-Thing's not on... Well, no, Man-Thing's not on the cover there. That I'll get to, because that's another favorite of mine. So I'm just like, holy shit, that was awesome. And the art looks so great. Like, this artist looks like this artist should be doing, like, a Man-Thing book. Like, it's a perfect style for a Man-Thing swamp creature there. Man-Thing has these powers of, like, setting people on fire within its grasp. So so right away Logan is on fire there, frees himself, and then we see another attack, and I didn't know this until I flipped to the cover. I'm like, holy shit, Hitmonkey comes out.
Hitmonkey
is a very short-lived character. I have all of Hitmonkey's comics, which isn't saying much because it's like five. Hitmonkey from like maybe like 10 or so years ago. This little like imagine like James Bond, but like a monkey, but maybe more evil.
Okay. Way.
And
I'm looking it up as we speak.
Yeah. So Hitmonkey.
Hitmonkey had its own series.
Yeah, I have the issues. Like I said, it was like four or five issues or something.
First appearance, Deadpool number 19, April 2010.
I probably have that because
very cool.
Yeah, that's where I first saw it. I want to say it was. I was trying to think who the hell was writing that at the time. Way. Daniel Way? Does that say created by Daniel Way, maybe?
Does it? Daniel Way and Dalibor Talajic.
Okay, and of course, that's got to be the artist, because he can't pronounce the name.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But yeah, that's where Hitmonkey debuted, and then it came out with like a four or five issue limited series, which I own, of course. But anyways...
This monkey is a martial artist.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a lot of awesome stuff. So Hitmonkey comes flying down... onto Logan, and I'm just like, holy shit, what's going on here? Then this character named of Warwolf comes out. So we just had Good Boy, the female werewolf in the other series. But now Warwolf comes out. And then we see more characters. We see the Manphibian. We see all of these characters come out. And as this is happening, it starts realizing why I know all these people beyond Hitmonkey and Man-Thing. These are, because Logan's like, all right, who the hell are you guys? And they are the Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now, the Howling Commandos would be, like, if you go back to the Captain America movies, you got Dum Dum Dugan.
Yeah.
You see them in Peggy Carter, in Agent Carter series. Yep. Those are the Howling Commandos. In the current Marvel Comics universe, the Howling Commandos is their supernatural branch. The hyphenated abbreviation word is STAKE. So S period T period stake. I don't know what that stands for yet, but I will soon, because the Howling Commandos, the first time I read them was at the beginning of this year, 2016, in Nick Spencer's when he did the Standoff series.
Yeah.
Standoff, which led to like the Pleasant Hill and that big event that was in the beginning, which led to Captain America's getting back to... getting his serum back and getting back to his his young, youthful, strong age. In there, one of the tie-in issues that I bought was an issue of Howling Commandos. It was a short-lived series that was this year, and I read that one issue because it was a tie-in to this, and I saw Man-Thing, and I saw Hitmonkey, and Manphibian, and Warwolf. I'm like, these are just some awesome characters that are all thrown together. And since reading this Old Man Logan issue, that series was canceled, by the way.
Okay.
Which got a lot of people upset. So, you know, A, it was canceled because it probably wasn't selling a lot of books. I didn't know about it until very late into the game. And after reading Old Man Logan number 14, right now, being shipped to me, is the entire Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. limited series, which is maybe like 9 issues or something like that. But there's a trade paperback out there. And I cannot wait to read that.
I think I might look for Hitmonkey.
Yeah.
Honestly, because I'm like, phone, I was looking at eBay, and there is nothing on there, though.
Is that right?
No.
Yeah, I've got them all downstairs.
The regular, the Hitmonkey series.
I own every Hitmonkey thing.
Oh, very nice.
With exception, now I do, because he was in the Howling Commandos.
So. Okay.
So unless he appeared in any other random issues, I may not have those, but yeah. But anyways, Logan has come across the Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they're all led to Romania, too, because Dracula himself has done something to lead all vampires to his castle. And Jubilee, being one of those vampires, she's under the trance of Dracula, which you'll get some fun Dracula-related stuff in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer show.
Okay.
And then also in the comic books. So the Howling Commandos are on the mission because it's kind of a supernatural thing. It falls under their jurisdiction, I guess, if you will. And Logan wants to find Jubilee because she's been, you know, under a spell, Dracula's spell. And
Is Dracula like a Marvel character now? I don't really get that.
Dracula is one of those characters that I think can exist anywhere.
Oh, okay.
That There's is a like name one for of those. That. I yeah, what it's it is. Like open domain.
Yeah, okay.
For instance, like, I think I could make, like, a... what the hell is an open domain thing? Like, I could make, like, a Snow White movie or something.
Well...
If I wanted
to. Oh, okay. Well, because I remember a couple of years ago, there was a big battle with Superman being open domain because he's so such an old character. Because
after so much time...
Yeah, in theory, DC was going to lose... I could be talking about out of my ass right now, but it was like DC, in theory, was going to be losing Superman as their own character. Yeah. So I think they, as far as I know, they took care of that.
But. I think, yeah, I think since all of that hoopla, and I think, like, I don't know if Mickey Mouse fell into, like, some of that shit.
Oh, wow.
Where I think there was an extended, like, something that was done to protect things like that.
Okay.
That I think, you know, people are safe now. Things that they probably wouldn't have thought that, oh, this is going to last for 75 years.
No.
Superman would be like, all right, hopefully he'll last enough that we can do another issue.
Yeah, yeah. We're doing this new thing called comic books.
Yeah. So, Dracula, which Dracula was, you know, in the Buffy show and everything. Like, I think Dracula is one of those characters that is very much like anyone can do it. You know, once again, I could be talking out of your ass now.
Don't ever talk out of my ass. Ever.
So, anyways.
You do not have my permission.
Okay, good. Do you want some Banaka?
No.
Ace Ventura.
Oh, God. What a reference.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, so the Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D., Old Man Logan, all storm the castle. The commandos are going to fight off the vampires. So you see this crazy-ass scene where the Howling Commandos are fighting off all these vamps while Logan said he is going to sneak into the castle to find Jubilee. He's using them as a distraction, basically. He finds Jubilee. She's all worried, and she's like, Logan, please, you have to help me. He's like, I got you, kid. Whatever's going on, it's going to be okay. Let's get out of here.
No F-bombs?
No. Nothing's censored out here yet, so. But anyway, she's all excited, you know, that he's there to save her and everything. But the thing that happens, Old Man Logan is led to a trap. So he goes to save Jubilee, goes to grab her to basically say, let's get out of here.
Oh, holy shit.
Yeah. You're reacting to the last page.
Oh, that's awesome.
And not the actual last page, which is advertising Slapstick's own book. Dracula, sneak attack on Old Man Logan, just bites the fuck out of his neck.
Wow.
Blood splatting, Old Man Logan screaming, and that's how that issue ends. And it says, the next issue, Old Man Logan versus Dracula, Dawn of Justice. And that answers my question where I made a reference to Dawn of Justice at Crimson Cowl. Okay, going back to the DC on CW, the Heroes versus Aliens that we both watched, Kara in Legends Tomorrow made a reference to the Legends saying, like, you guys are Earth's mightiest heroes. And right away I'm like, and Kurt and Crimson Cowl were reacting, just like, what the fuck? Avengers are Earth's mightiest heroes. That's their tagline. They're just like, what the fuck, Kara? Like, you just called them the Earth's mightiest heroes? And I'm like, you know what? In Marvel, I just read something about Dawn of Justice, but I was looking at the shelf. I'm like, I don't know where the hell I read that. And now it hits me. I'm just like, sure. Oh, yeah. It showed up in this book where they subtitled the upcoming... So, oh, man, look at that.
Oh, that next cover looks pretty ridiculous.
That looks
like Old Man Logan with some vampire teeth.
This looks like a Francesco Francavilla type of art. I don't know if this is his...
So,
it's hard to read there.
Now, what issue number was this again? I'm sorry, 14?
This is 14.
Okay, now, the Old Man Logan issue number one that I bought, is that from this run, or was there another Old Man Logan series before this?
Good question. I'm pretty sure that is the current one.
Oh, it is? Yes, okay.
Because it only happened after Secret Wars. So it wasn't as a result of Secret Wars resetting it after like four issues or something. So Old Man Logan, number one that you have, is the beginning of this shit.
Oh, okay.
But there is an Old Man Logan series that existed 10 years ago.
Oh.
That is why this series exists. Okay. That was Mark Miller and Steve McNiven.
Oh, that's not what I have. Okay.
Okay.
Wow, this...
And you can enjoy this without having that, but that is an iconic piece thing that you're going to want to go back and read. It's like six or seven issues or so.
Okay.
But, yeah. That's how Old Man Logan became famous, and then they found a way to bring him back and do more stories with him, so...
So from the issue number one that I read...
Yes.
this many issues later, it has, it's totally not in the same place whatsoever.
Yeah, he said
this quite, is all over the place.
He said this is like the start of like a third arc, but he's had some very interesting. He's had a lot of journeys.
That's
Wolverine.
Awesome.
That's what he's meant to be, and as he's always going through,
yeah,
just being off by himself, come back to the X-Men team, then going back by himself, it's good stuff. I love it.
Good. Cool.
So that was Old Man Logan, issue number 14.
All right, now I'm going to be talking about the Batman Annual number 1, Silent Night. A hush of winter snowfall has fallen over Gotham City, but a quiet night in this place is never truly quiet. Batman and his allies and his many foes stalk the streets in this icy showcase of top talent. So this annual was a lot different than any other annuals that I've read of recent. We have multiple short stories in here, some written by the likes of Scott Byron Wilson, Steve Orlando, Paul Dini, Scott Snyder, and Tom King. Art by Bilquis Everly, David Finch, Declan Chevrolet, sure. Neil Adams, Riley Rossmo, and David Finch. Before, I'm not going to go through this page by page, but yeah. Just before I jump into the one thing I'm going to be talking about, in general, did you find this issue pretty entertaining?
To a certain extent.
Okay.
Now, I'm always so on annuals. There's two versions of annuals. There's this one, where it's a collection of short stories, which, you know, can be fun, but also can be like, you get attached to one, and then it's over, and then you're like, oh, okay, and then you got to switch completely different art gears and writing gears. So for me, it's always a hit or miss when it comes to annuals.
This, when I was reading this, until I got to about the last couple pages, I was very blah. Like, I was like, okay, these are fun short stories, you know, whatever. Like, some of them are like 3 pages, some of them are 5 pages, and there's nothing in terms of the current DC universe that's really important in here.
Yeah.
Until you get to the Steve Orlando story.
Steve Orlando currently writing Supergirl, which I love, and the recent Namesake, his own creator-owned series.
It is a two-issue, it's a two-page story, and I didn't really think of it. It's right towards the back here. I didn't really think anything of it. I just started, you know, I started reading it, and right before we started recording, I was like confused. I was trying to remember something. But you have Bruce talking what you are, you know, he's talking to Duke. You have him leaving, and then it jumps slightly to what looks like the future, and you get what someone you're either looking at, maybe an old Bruce Wayne, or you're looking at a like a current oops, kick. I wonder if they hear that when I kick that.
Yeah, they all like feel it too.
Oh, do they really? Yeah. Okay, good.
It's like at the end of that Jessica Jones issue where like the fist comes out of nowhere. That's what it's like when you bump the podcast table.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just ruined everything. But you have someone that is going in an elevator, and then you see someone that says, no, stay away. Don't you? And you see a splash of blood. And then you have this new character called Stag saying, I am an honest signal. And you have Stag and the stay coming in 2017. So in this annual, they decided to introduce us to a brand new character, someone that I am not familiar with at all, because I've, as far as I know, this is new.
Yeah.
No idea who it is. And it's a pretty menacing looking person. I'm going to guess that it's a lady. And then you have her kind of in a, I don't know, scary mask. She slices the guy's...
Got some horns.
Yeah, she slices...
Hair for horns? For hair?
She's wearing, like, a big,
cape?
Yeah, like a big cape and...
Shawl?
Yeah. And, I just thought, for a very average annual, in my opinion, I thought it ended pretty cool, because they're kind of jump-starting 2017 already, and it's giving you a good reason to look forward to the future. So I think DC Rebirth in general, they're planning stuff out a lot more than they did with the new 52. From what I can tell, their plans going forward seem to be a lot more organized than they did, like, whatever, 4 or 5 years ago with the new 52.
I'm curious if the Stag, when it says, you know, coming in 2017, if this issue is written by Steve Orlando, that, like...
Is he going to be the...
Yeah, if... Or if this shows up in, like, Tom King's Batman.
Yeah.
But I only bring that up because for February in the current previews book, I had heard Steve Orlando on the Word Balloon podcast, okay. And he was talking about he has a Justice League of America book that he's writing. There's a Rebirth number one and a number one that shows up in February, written by him, and the team has, like, Batman. It's got Killer Frost is on the team.
Really? Okay.
There's someone else. Like, I forget what the cover is at this point, but it was enough where, like, normally I don't read Justice League, but I'm like... Well, I'm digging what Steve Orlando's doing on Supergirl and then the namesake book. And I liked him listening on the Word Balloon podcast. And I'm just like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. Plus, Killer Frost being on that team got to me just being like, that feels like a Clayface Detective Comics type of deal.
Where they're just kind of, where it doesn't seem like it would fit in, but then it works really well.
Yeah, that'd be like, you know, the Avengers being like, hey, Sandman, you're going to be on our team. And it'd just be like, what the fuck? Why is Sandman going to team up with the Avengers?
Sure. So I enjoy this annual a lot. And to me, just with this introduction of this Stag, made this book just a lot more important. Who knows? Maybe this is a first appearance.
Mm.
You know? So there you go. So, but yeah, if you like a nice collection of really short Batman stories and you want to see an intro to new characters, someone that we're potentially going to be seeing in 2017, I definitely would pick this up. I really would. So, Batman Annual number one.
The last spoiler-filled review is Extraordinary X-Men number 16, the epic conclusion of Kingdom's Fall. Magic's protege, Sapna, has become possessed by the World Eater, an extra-dimensional entity whose sole purpose is to live up to its name. And Magic's brother, Colossus, is under the thrall of one of X-Men's greatest adversaries, Apocalypse, as the World Eater bears down on Limbo, which is currently where all the X-Men are hiding out in the mansion, away from the Terrigen Mist. Everything Magic cares about is on the line. Her ward, her brother, and the world's surviving mutants. What will it cost to save them all?
How much?
It cost me $3.99
to
save them all. This is written by Jeff Lemire once again. Art by Victor Ibanez.
Sounds like a guitar. I think that's a guitar.
No, sure. Colors by J. David Ramos and letters by Joe Caramagna. Extraordinary X-Men. I talked about, if you listen to this podcast already, then I don't have to talk about the Terrigen Mist thing because they're living in X-Haven. They're away from it. There was an alert that they got at the beginning of the series that there was like 4,000 new mutants that were born in like Japan or something. They're like, holy shit. Our race is dying out, so we're definitely going to go to Japan, get these mutants, and try to save them. And there was one mutant, Sapna, this young girl, who Magic, a.k.a. Ileana Rasputin, she took Sapna under her wing, and I'm going to train you, I'm going to take you from your parents, I'm going to make sure she's safe, I'm going to give her a home, I'm going to have her, you know, use her powers, learn how to use her powers. Everything's going to be okay. Well, if it's a comic book story, that means nothing's going to be okay. Because why else tell the comic book story?
Sure.
So, throughout the issues, the X-Men went 1,000 years into the future. Apocalypse is there. He took Colossus as one of his horsemen. The X-Men were in the future. They were able to stop them and basically bring them back to the present. So they jailed Apocalypse, who is now like depowered, but he's in jail. But Colossus is still under the thrall of Colossus or of Apocalypse power. So they're both in prison right now. And while all this shit was going on, Sapna went missing because she thought she was like a burden to the X-Men, if I remember correctly. So they're like, oh shit, we have to go find her and tell her that, you know, everything's okay, you're not a burden, and, you know, you're part of the family, you have a place here with us, and, you know, this all this new stuff that you're experiencing with your mutant powers, everything's okay because you're one of us and you have family. So while all that was going on, this World Eater character came in and it basically needs a living host to exist. And this World Eater captured Sapna and is now embodied, is living with inside the little girl's body, and Storm and Magic went trying to find her. And that, remember several issues ago where I had shown this giant splash page where it just showed them dimension hopping, and it was like,
it was fantastic.
It was
colorful.
It was extraordinary.
I would say that would make a good poster.
Yeah, I would definitely buy that as a poster. It was so amazing. So while they're dimension hopping.
There you go.
Hey, what's happening? while they're dimension.
Hashtag what's happening?
Yeah. Hey, what's happening? They found some other crazy characters that they brought with them to help stop this World Eater. Some characters that were affected by the World Eater themselves. So that's, now we're here in issue 16.
Okay, I think I'm following so far for the most part. Yeah.
If you didn't read it for the last 16 issues, I just did your work for you.
That was so much easier.
Yeah, you owe me money.
Save
now.
Save me some money.
No, you owe me money now.
God
so.
Damn it.
Because I just read you some great comics. We open up the World Eater / Sapna has now showed up on X-Haven. So this giant beast is here. There's dragons. Cerebra, that I mentioned in the Old Man Logan one, is like grabbing all these young mutants here that are left because just shit's going down. Old Man Logan's there jumping in and he gets speared right away. And like young Iceman is all like flipping out and just like going crazy. And what's awesome is that all of this stuff is happening. There's so much. Like, what I love about this is that there's like four storylines going on in one giant comic here. And
I feel like that is a Jeff Lemire story.
Yeah.
Right there. Like, just because he manages to be able to do that stuff and does it in a way where the reader can follow along.
Yeah, it's definitely as crazy as it sounds. If you've never read any of these issues I'm talking about, it may sound like I'm just being crazy right now. I understood this completely, and there's a reason why this is my favorite book of the damn week.
damn week.
Apocalypse is demanding to be freed. So he's in prison. He's screaming at Forge, who is trying to figure out how to save Colossus, and everyone's just Glob, who is this new mutant, who is basically looks like if a skeleton is protected in gelatin.
Yeah.
A gelatin skeleton.
He's like a smaller pink Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, his name is Glob. He's had this crush over young Jean Grey.
He has a chance.
Well, honestly, it is one of the some of the most heartbreaking things, seeing him go up to Jean Grey and just like try to like ask her out, basically, and like they keep having their like, it's every time he gets close to asking her, like shit like this happens and the World Eater shows up. But yeah, anyways, Apocalypse wants to be freed, and he gives them an ultimatum in a way. Well, not an ultimatum. He gives them an offer by saying he'll return Colossus back to his normal state if they free Apocalypse. And it's just like, damn, do we gamble with that? So that's going on. Ileana gives Storm some of her power. So Ileana is starting to feel weak here. Storm is asking for it. Storm gets it. Storm gets extra powered in order to basically take on the World Eater here. So we see Jean Grey freaking out, and Nightcrawler is just trying to like deal with all this shit going on. Apocalypse is I think I posted that picture. Yeah. See, it's great. A lot of times when you point out you haven't read these books here, a lot of times
I don't follow up with social media as much as other people do.
Yeah.
So I don't see everything you post.
And a lot of what you point to as I'm reading this is literally the stuff that I have posted already.
That is nice.
Yeah. So as here's Sapna, she's the little girl. She's just got these crazy like tentacles going on, and she's like killing Cerebro. She's like going through. She's got Magic's sword. Magic always wields this giant sword here, and she's ready to just like destroy everybody. But this is when Storm's up there. She's creating a storm with the help of Magic's power. She's got all the other creatures that they found in when they went dimension happening, and all the shit's going on. Magic is able to wield her sword, pull the sword out of Sapna's grasp after she was kind of stunned by Storm there. Yeah, just amazing art.
So I was just going to say, the art is blowing. I'm creeping in on, like, basically over your shoulder, kind of looking at this, and the art is blowing
over my mind. Over the shoulder boulder holder?
Yeah.
I don't know. I overheard that on a podcast this week.
I don't even know what that means.
It's a bra.
Ah.
It's an over-the-shoulder boulder holder.
Okay, I guess that makes sense.
I'm trying to think where I heard that on. Oh, I think, I forget. Anyways, I listen to, for as many comics as I read, I also listen to that many
just
podcasts.
Just as many podcasts, yeah.
Magic gets her sword back, and this is when she's just ready to bear down and just go crazy. But Sapna / the World Eater starts to trick her here, and here's another image I shared here. Sapna is going, Ileana, please, I don't want to do this. And for a second, Ileana thinks that she had tapped in, that there's still part of Sapna living inside this creature, that she's trying to reach out and just being like, I'm so close and save me. They're reaching for hands. And that's when there's the big turnaround. I shared this image where Sapna / the World Eater goes, you are a sentimental fool.
Oh.
It basically just zaps the hell out of Ileana, completely tricking her to get the upper hand. This is when Nightcrawler is demanding that Forge release Apocalypse so that Colossus can be restored. Forge is like, I'm not doing it. He's like, I can't unprison Apocalypse. On top of everything that's going on out there, I can't do this. Even though they need the help of, like, you know, Colossus and all this stuff's going on and they can't figure out. Forge even says, he's like, I don't think I can cure him. And the only cure is going to be letting Apocalypse out of here. And Nightcrawler just keeps saying, he's like, just trust me. He's like, just believe me, I've got this figured out. So, what's going on here is that he finally does it. Colossus works his mojo here on Colossus to return Colossus for the first time in like 4 or 5 issues, I think, returns him back to normal. But, and this is when Apocalypse is like, well, now you have to release me.
This what is the this? Time.
This is parts of the mansion that lives in Limbo right now. So this is like a tower.
Okay.
See, this
looks like something else.
What do you mean?
I don't know.
Are you saying it looks phallic?
It does a little bit,
There's another one over here, so.
Okay.
It's probably just like a watchtower.
Yeah, let's go with that.
A dick tower.
Yeah.
Apocalypse like, all right, you have to live up the other end of the deal. You have to set me free. I return Colossus back to you. And that's when, like, Nightcrawler's like, all right. And once again, he tells Forge, he's just like, because Forge is like, don't. And he's just like, I told you to trust me, Forge. And he's like, we had a deal. So I was going to release him, give him freedom. So Nightcrawler, who bamps, he teleports from location to location, grabs onto Apocalypse, bamps, goes over here, drops him into this giant tornado whirlpool thing that Sapna, / the World Eater, has created. He's like, well, I freed you. I didn't tell you that I was going to free you into this damnation here.
Yeah.
And that's when quickly he's able to pull it off. You know, even though Apocalypse is like looking pretty weak, there's probably maybe like he probably had a couple seconds that if Nightcrawler didn't do this right away, that Apocalypse probably could have just like, you know, freed himself or killed some other people. So it was quickly enough. Dropped him into this like giant whirlpool of shit that's going on here. Ileana has her sword yet. She regains her power here, and there's only one way to stop this shit. She stabs the little girl, which is overtaken by the World Eater, and at the last second, you do get a sense that this young girl Sapna, who's probably like anywhere from like 7 to 10, maybe.
Yeah.
Age-wise, she's like, Ileana, as Sapna's being released from this World Eater at the expense of her death, basically,
because
she had to be stabbed by the sword. World Eater's done, but now what goes into, like, honestly, like, and I didn't even see this part, thanks to the digital thing.
Yeah.
Like, well, maybe not thanks, because it was emotional when it did it, so So I saw this part, and you see Colossus and Nightcrawler just kind of, you know, being together. He looks angry there, but I think they were I think that was
Joe. They're, like, laughing.
Yeah, yeah. Forge looks, he's pretty laid back, yeah. And Glob is all like, ah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyways, that happened, so I was like, oh, cool, Colossus is back, and everything's cool, and he's depowered, you know, he's de-steeled down right now, so that's why he looks like Hercules, basically. But anyways, I was like, oh, cool, happy moment. And I cut back to Sapna, free of the World Eater, but now she just looks like the life's
been sucked out of her.
Yeah, yeah, the life's been sucked out of her. Magic is crying. Storm, Logan, and young Iceman, Bobby, is standing there. Like Logan, who had just got speared, like he's holding his chest there. Everyone got affected. And I, like, there's dragons down. And it's just like their school is destroyed. The Cerebra, the big good sentinel. Like, this image itself, like, I felt heartbreak here. For 16 issues, I give or take, that we met Sapna, it was just like seeing, you know, this young girl get, you know, she doesn't make it.
Is this like a final issue? It feels so final.
It does. It's not.
Okay. I mean, it just feels like a, I mean, we're, yeah. I know you're not done talking about it yet, but.
Yeah, there's still a couple pages left, but yeah, like I said, it was just like, seeing that was just awful. And, but, you know, it was the big sacrifice here. Magic had to do it to save everyone, to save the remaining mutants that exist since the Terrigen Mist. But yeah, anyways, like I said, just looking at that image was just, I had to, like, pause there for a while. Yeah. And you see more of it here, and it's just like,
jeez.
It's like, come on, cut away from it, you fucking
yeah.
writers and artists. Stop yeah. showing us this travesty. But they look at this. This is when Storm realizes, and I talked about this in the IVX, this is when Storm realizes they have to stop hiding out. The whole idea, and I think she says it here, we've hidden for too long. It's time we face things. It's time we reclaimed our place in the world one way or another. And you know, Nightcrawler and Colossus are glad they're best buds and stuff, so they're glad that they're back, but, you know, it's hard that... you know, Colossus seeing his sister like this, that she just sacrificed this this child here, and seeing how she's going to, like, you know, deal with this. So it ends on Magic, who's, like, sitting on this this just giant rock pillar, and she's sitting there with her sword that she had to kill her, her, you know, the youngling, the young mutant that she promised her parents she was going to protect. She essentially had to kill in order to protect everyone. And she's just sitting there, and it looks angry, and she's looking at her sword, and then you get a word balloon out of the sword that goes, Ileana? Sapna?
Oh.
And that's where the comic ends.
So it, like, sucked her soul out, like, the...
Yeah.
Interesting.
So my guess is that Sapna is living within inside this magical sword of Ileana, a.k.a. Magic with a K. And I'm glad that it happened, like, so quickly like that, because I was, like I said, if it would have just ended, I'm like, I was so devastated like that. There's, you know, comics are fun, and even when bad things happen, it's still fun just because of the entertainment, the excitement, and the storytelling, and it's all fictional fun and all that stuff. It's a good escape from the real world, but that was one of those things where I just, like, really felt it, and if it would have ended like that, I'd have to wait for another month just to have that in memoriam thing and, like, see what would happen. But by the end of that issue, like, a couple more swipes of my finger when I read it digitally is when I got hope. Because it's one of the classic The End? Mark. We just saw that in the Batman annual.
So you're for sure getting another issue of this, right? It's not literally the end of this
run. Oh, yeah. I've been pre-ordering through February.
Okay.
As long as Jeff Lemire has been going on with this, I'm getting it for sure.
I'm assuming it's been solid the whole time that you've been reading it?
It definitely has. It really... this is here. Here's an interesting thing, which will close out my review here. We talk about this here, where I put all of my new books in order of of most excited to read to least excited to read. Sometimes that's true. Where the books on the very bottom, I would start to realize, why am I buying this? Maybe I start realizing I should just drop that title.
Yeah,
that'll happen. This is going to be crazy. Extraordinary X-Men was like the third last book of a 20...
I was just going to say 20 books.
Of a 20-book thing.
Yeah.
Now, it's one of those exclusive loopholes where It wasn't on the bottom because I was bored with reading it. It was on the bottom because there just so happened to be a lot of awesome comics week.
Yeah.
And as I'm flipping through, for some odd reason, I do it real quick. I don't sit there and think about it. I just, instinct, I just put them in that order. And for some reason, Extraordinary X-Men number 16 fell to the very bottom of that stack. And when I read that comic, it got to the very top of the stack because it was my favorite book.
So does this mean when issue number 17 comes out, you think it's going to be towards the top?
It's going to be very up there.
Yeah.
The only way it could be second in that stack is if it happens to come out when the next Serenity or Buffy book comes out. Those are the exceptions because I've been with those characters since 97.
Yeah.
Even though I've been with the X-Men longer, technically.
But
you know what I mean.
Those are personally. Characters.
Yeah, yeah.
You've met some of them personally. Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
So, there you go.
But yeah, anyways, that just shows you how great this book was, is the fact that it was on the bottom of my very big pile, just by happenstance, by happening. And but now it rose to the top as my favorite freaking comic book of this past week,
which is
Extraordinary X-Men number 16. Other comics I enjoyed this past week: Serenity, No Power in the Verse number 2, Ghost Rider number 1, Detective Comics number 945 from like a week or two prior, Saga chapter 40, Uncanny Inhumans number 16, Black Widow number 8, No Angel number 1, Superman Annual number 1. I just gotta mention two things about those books. No Angel is Adrian Palicki and Eric Palicki, a brother-sister combo who wrote this. Adrian Palicki, who plays Mockingbird, a.k.a. Bobby Morris on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
She was the Wonder Woman in a possible pilot that was going to be a Wonder Woman TV show. Didn't get picked up. Maybe 5 years
ago. I
didn't
even know that.
There's footage you can see online. I didn't see the pilot, but I've seen footage of it and her outfit and stuff like that. And
cool.
You know, it was different, but I was into it.
Damn.
But anyway, she's from the G.I. Joe movies, and then I found out that she writes comics. So from Black Mass Comics, No Angel, Crimson Cull got it in just because it was a new number one. It was interesting. I was totally oblivious. I knew she wrote comics that just started, but I didn't know that it was an actual, like, I thought I was going to have to buy it from her, like, online or buy it digitally or, like, a Kickstarter thing. And I picked it up, and it takes place, the story took place in Wisconsin, by the way. But anyways, it's a, she works for the FBI in a division in Chicago, and the opening of the pages is that she comes to investigate the house where her brother and her father were mysteriously murdered.
Okay.
And that's where it jumps in, and the great surprise at the end. But No Angel was pretty great.
You're going to pick up the next one, I'm assuming?
Then? I'm definitely going
to. Cool.
And then real quick, like, this could have been, like, I had to pick three books, and this could have been, you know, this is the Invisible Fourth. Superman Annual number 1, unlike the Batman Annual, this is all one story, unrelated to the Superman continuity.
And neither of us read Superman.
Correct.
I don't have any super books. You have one. You have Supergirl.
Yeah.
So that's
currently
it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't normally read a lot of Superman, even in my collection. I don't have a lot of it. This one on the cover had my boy Swamp Thing. And so I wasn't sure if it was going to be like the Batman one where he's going to be on two pages and then it's someone else's story. This whole thing, this whole $4.99 comic is all Swamp Thing and Superman. They're
nice.
The only two characters in this book. And it was a fun...
I'm going to pick a page. There better only be two of them there. Well, who's that? Now, what is that?
That's Wonder Woman in an ad for DCBS. All right,
I guess I'll let that service slide.
But yeah, there's only two characters, and it's about Swamp Thing helping Superman find a place in this whole rebirth universe type of deal. Gorgeous art. Really great story. It's all one and done. Like I said, I'm not reading Superman, and the fact that I picked this up only for Swamp Thing, and I would have been fine if he was only on two pages. I probably wouldn't have cared about the rest of the other stories, but I was glad it was an entire comic. So I absolutely loved Superman Annual number 1.
I only got two other books this week because I've been culling my pull. There's going to be a lot more Marvel stuff I'm going to be getting that I'm going to got to make room for. So, but I enjoyed Saga issue number 40 and Serenity No Power in the Verse number 2. That is a fucking good series, man. Yeah, good. I'm so happy that you forced me to basically read the Baby Leap. Back.
Yep, it's Baby Got Back issues number 3 from September, which is Serenity, Leaves on the Wind,
yes, that's issues what it was. 1-6. It's like it forced me to read that. I never would have probably touched it, and I'm all on board with this one. So,
Bag and board,
absolutely.
I say that every time you say you're on board.
I'm going to keep doing it.
And I'm going to keep doing it.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
All right. And now a word from our sponsor.
Do you want to go on a diet, but you hate doing it alone, so instead you would want to diet with your significant other? Then try new frozen meals, Smart Twos. With Smart Twos, you'll get twice the amount of healthy food in one box for only twice the price of Smart Ones. Smart Twos. One may be the loneliest number, but the second loneliest number is two.
All right, well, this is part of the show when we talk about recent pickups and trade paperbacks and just anything that's going on in the comic book world.
And it's all spoiler-free, so whatever we're talking about is only just to help plus, advertise it.
My God, if we were spoiling something, we're at an hour and 10 minutes already. So, this podcast has to be long. But I went to Chicago over this past weekend. I was actually trying to tell you as little about it as possible because I knew I had stuff picked up, and I'm like, nah, I'm just going to save it for the podcast.
Right.
The first thing, I actually stopped at a place in Kenosha, Wisconsin called Inner Child. I didn't know this place was even in existence. Whenever I am around cities that I normally don't go to, the one thing I always do is I Google comic book stores in, and then I type the city that I'm in.
Yeah.
And Kenosha actually does have quite a few. One I've been to already. I can't think of what it's called right now, but this Inner Child I decided to go to. And holy shit, this thing was like a comic book store flea market. I have sent you a bunch of pictures, and there was so much shit there, all comic book related. There was a lot of science fiction stuff, a lot of Star Wars stuff, Star Trek, all that stuff. I'm a big Terminator fan, and I came across something for only $5. It's this Terminator 2 Judgment Day, the official adaptation of the hit film, and this was put out by Marvel in 1991. And without knowing anything about it, I'm like, oh, I'm buying it. Like, without even thinking, it's in pretty decent shape.
Is it all in one issue, or is it, like, is there other parts of it?
There is, actually, I think there's, I want to say three.
Okay.
And this would be issue, there's three. This is issue number one. But we have based on the screenplay by James Cameron and William Wisher. Adaptation is Gregory Wright. Art is Klaus Janson. Letterer is Jim Novak. Then we got some editors, assistant editors. And I only read the first page. I'm going to tear through this thing over the weekend. But
now, hopefully not literally.
Not literally. There's not going to be any ripping of any pages. But I just got to read this first page.
All right.
But I'm going to show you the artwork here. You know, it's nothing, it's black and white. It's nothing that's going to, set any art records. But for me, I don't really give a shit about that because this is how it starts. Los Angeles, July 11th, 2029. 3 billion lives ended on August 29th, 1997. The survivors of the nuclear fire called the War Judgment Day. They lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Skynet. The computer which controlled the machines sent two Terminators back through time. Their mission? To destroy the leader of the human resistance, John Connor, my son. And everyone has seen all the Terminator movies a dozen times. I mean, it's nothing new. But there's something when you can live out... Terminator 2 is in my top 5 favorite movies.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is like that for a lot of people. For me, it is. I've seen it... Realistically, I probably have seen it at least 100 times.
When it comes to Terminator movies, that is easily the best one.
It is.
I think everyone will agree to that.
And I enjoy them all. I mean, I'm not like one of those people that that bitches. Like even the last one with Daenerys.
Oh, okay.
I love that movie. A lot of people shit on Amelia that. Clark. I was like, really? I fucking loved it. There's something about being able to have something. Like artistic and in quote unquote comic book form from that movie. This is a magazine size too.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
It's like regular, like really loose paper, you know. But
You were almost going to tear
it. I was going to, but $5, man, from 1991. Yeah, to me, this is a great part of my collection now.
Yeah, I'm surprised it wasn't more.
I know. Like, well, and the guy, it was kind of funny. I was talking to this guy. He was old. He was like, well, old compared to us. He's probably like good 60, 65 years old. And it was just cool because I'm like, God, I'm like, you got a lot of stuff in here. And I said, I'm like, there's a back room that is off limits to customers. I kind of stuck my head in there and I'm like, I see you got a bunch of shit back there. He's like, yeah. He's like, I used to do cons and stuff. I don't really do them anymore. He told me probably the most painful story I've ever heard. He's like, I had a really bad experience at Wizard World in Chicago a couple years ago. I'm like,
oh. He had like a gallstone or something?
It's worse painful than that. Story. It's worse than okay. that. He had an X-Men number one stolen.
Oh.
Graded.
Oh.
Yeah. So he has a bad taste in his mouth, so he decided to open up that store 5 years ago. And but yeah, I sat and talked with him for a little bit. And he actually, that was the coolest thing that I ever heard a business owner say. He goes, yeah, a lot of this stuff is still my hobbies. I sell all this stuff, but it's more fun for me if I'm able to trade and get stuff that I don't have. And I'm like, that's really fucking cool. Normally someone that is legitimately there to make money, and he is, he likes trading with people. I thought that was kind
of
cool.
Wonder if he needs a box of Star Wars cereal.
He might. I didn't see any cereal there.
But I got some extra Batman cereal. I can give that to him.
So. But that would be, for you, that'd be a trek worth making. I would suggest don't bring a credit card. I'm not even kidding. Because there's going to be some, I think I sent you pictures of some Buffy stuff. Pretty sure I did. Buffy and Angel stuff that I've never seen before. Okay. I took them. I'll show them to you.
So the Swamp Thing stuff.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, that was a really good experience. I'm going to go back there again. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So, what about you guys?
Inner Child,
yep. And if you want me to go back and forth here, I got some other stuff that I picked up in Chicago.
Speaking of Swamp Thing, when I was in Chicago, like beginning of the month or so, I went to one of my hot spots, Graham Cracker Comics in Naperville, Illinois, and get many a good things there. And I like Graham Cracker stores. That got one in Madison, Wisconsin. And I've been to.
That was an experience that we had too when we went there.
Been to the downtown one in Chicago. That's near the whatever they call that Miracle Mile or Millennium Mile or Michigan Avenue. It's all that shit.
What?
It's all of those things, but
combined into one.
It is.
For the ultimate shopping experience.
Yes. But anyways, I was going through some back issues, and then I just saw, a Swamp Thing number one issue, and I'm just like, well, it's not a Swamp Thing number. Like, it can't be a prop, like, the original.
The original,
one.
Yeah.
But it was a reprinting that was, like, a couple years later, a reprinting of it, and I'm just like, oh, that was so cool.
It looks fucking old.
Yeah, and it's definitely, it's still from the 80s, I think?
Oh, okay.
But, with it being a reprint...
Not just old, fucking old.
Yeah. So this is from... It was reprinted in... 1977, because I think it was early... Yeah. I think it was early 70s for Swamp Thing. And then, so this was printed, like, maybe 5 years later. They reprinted the original story. It's still an old comic. It was $2. It was $2 from Greg.
Okay.
Cracker Comics here. And it might have been, based on the condition of your creases and all that shit that I don't care about, because I'm like, oh, this
Well, you're literally getting it to read it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's part of your collection.
You know, and I've read this story many a times, but it was cool to have,
Who's the writer on that one?
This one, it was co-created by the... Well, it was written by the co-creator, Len Wein.
Okay.
Who created Wolverine. I met him a couple years ago when I talked to him about his Watchmen... Before Watchmen, Ozymandias series. But Len Wein is the original co-creator, and then Bernie Wrightson is the artist.
I just want to double check something. What was the date
on that? It says volume one. Okay, because it's part of a DC special series. They call it.
Okay.
Volume one, number two, but this is from 1977, supposedly.
Okay, cool. So that would only be like 6 years after.
Yeah,
this original,
I said it was like probably around 5 or so.
Well, that's cool, dude. That's like, I mean, to me, that is, that's fucking old, too, though.
This thing,
even though it's a reprint, it's still an old reprint.
And this thing they call the special series, so they must went through like, oh, there's a special series where we reprint this story and that story.
There's an Action Comics reprint number one that's like $1,000. Because, they reprinted it so long ago. That,
and this one, smells like the swamp, so I love it. So.
Nice.
But yeah, not so I'm cool. Like, all right, that's cool, because if I ever meet Len Wein again, I was too busy talking about the Ozymandias character that I didn't even, you know, say anything about Swamp Thing.
Is Len still alive?
He is, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was a couple years ago. He was at C2E2, and I'm hoping that he makes a trek back to Chicago so I can meet him again and get that signed, because that'd be pretty cool. But to go on with the swamp stuff, still part of the same story here. I was flipping through, and speaking of Man-Thing, who I talked about in Old Man Logan number 14, I went through and I saw a Man-Thing number one issue. And I'm like, well, what the fuck? So I went through, and this
one... Was this Neighbor?
This was still... Stuff? Yeah, it was still like Graham Crackers, and that was $3. And this one, this is from a couple weeks ago, so I had to remember what, like, if this was like a... Okay. I'm pretty sure... Hold on.
That's fine.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if this was... Might have been a... Okay. I remember what this one is now. So he premiered in a weird offset, like... an off Strange Tales or something like that, in one of those kind of books, along with like Howard the Duck. Like, so this isn't his first appearance. Then he got a Man-Thing number one series, which was very short lived, and maybe I think it got lucky if it did 12 issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then they canceled it, and then a couple years later they brought it back. So this is a number one of a volume two of a Man-Thing. Once again, still
cool.
A real like old like 70s, cool, early 80s comic here. 1979. Smells like the Swamp too. But now this was a Man-Thing one.
It smells like the man.
Yeah. Smells like the man, Ben Grimm, a.k.a. the Thing. Whatever. But anyways, it was another cool, like, number one old school comic to pick up. And while it's not your... This ain't the first appearance. This ain't even the second appearance.
Doesn't matter.
It's an awesome old comic that didn't cost me much.
Well, no, and it's like memorabilia at this point. I mean, the fact that... I mean, how... And that's a sweet-ass cover, too.
And this one says, The Man-Thing, frightful first issue of the second volume. But, it's still a 40-cent comic back then. I paid $3 this time around.
Worth it.
And then the last part of this swampy story, as I was doing that, I've done many a Swamp Thing and Man Thing research, and I have to hide what I'm holding in my hands right here.
That's what I'm doing. I got something here. I don't
We're always hiding comics. That should have been our podcast name, Hiding Comics.
Well, we have natural reactions when we do that.
Yeah, we're doing this for...
No.
But anyways, super quick version. Everyone's like, all right, who came first? Man Thing or Swamp Thing? Swamp Thing is...
The chicken. No.
Oh, okay. Swamp Thing is easily more famous. Because people say Man Thing, they're like, what the hell's Man Thing? They're like, oh, is he just a ripoff of Swamp Thing? Man Thing was published 2 months prior to Swamp Thing from Marvel Comics. And people are like, holy shit, DC like quickly jumped the gun to copy that, and he created Swamp Thing. It's been long proven and decided that because of the time of making comics, of writing it, drawing it, inking it, lettering it, producing it, printing it, publicizing it, releasing it, bagging it, putting it on the shelf and the newsstands.
Reading it.
Doing all of the process.
Rebagging, boarding it.
Yeah.
Putting it in the box,
All right, we're done with that segment.
Oh, okay. Well,
during all of that mess, that there was impossible for DC to see Man-Thing and then be like, rush out in 2 months and create Swamp Thing. That it's been physically impossible to be able to be that quick. It has long since been a long time coincidence that within 2 months of each other, there's a character named Man-Thing from Marvel, and 2 months later, character named Swamp Thing from DC. But that's not where the swamp creatures start in comics. That goes all the way back to 1942. A character named The Heap.
What the fuck?
So this I recently found out about. Just been doing more Man-Thing, Swamp-Thing research.
Never heard of it.
The Heap debuted in Air Boy Comics in 1941-42.
What is Air Boy Comics?
The Heap.
I'm intrigued.
This version that you see on this hardcover collection, presented by Roy Thomas, he kind of looks like the Man-Thing in a way. He kind of shares that, what Roy Thomas says, kind of like a dangling carrot for a nose. but The Heap, I'll show you what The Heap really looks like. This collection that I bought off of eBay, Volume 1 Collected Works, introduced by Roy Thomas, has a lot of introduction.
Did you read the introduction?
Yeah, because it has like a lot of stuff that I just kind of told you. A lot of stuff I kind of knew, but dipped more into the heap and just all this shit here. This is what the heap looks like. Like his first appearance. Like this is what the heap looks like
in 1942. Oh, God, how do you even...
It's just like a giant Sasquatch of a Wampa.
With really long hair, yeah.
It's a Wampa meets Cousin It, basically. Bigfoot, Cousin It type of character. And it took place in, like, World War I, jumped to World War II, but it's a swamp character.
Yeah.
And I am about, you know, almost halfway through.
So the question I have for you is, how is that the read? Is it?
It's fun. Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm reading a lot.
It's
got to
be pretty goofy.
It's goofy, but it's fun, and I'm getting through it. And yeah, you know, I haven't been reading this for weeks. I just started this week, so I'm decently in here. But the fun thing is, One Man Thing and Swamp Thing debuted within 2 months of each other. Ironically enough, that same year, a couple months later, they revitalized the heat.
Yeah.
And they brought him back into, like, current comics continuity. So, within the same year, three swamp monsters were just, like, ruling the comic book world.
Love it.
But, yeah, so I'm becoming more familiar with the heap. And so it's been a very swampy type of year, or month, week.
Whatever.
Month, year, week, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right, so after Kenosha, I went to Chicago. And, of course, what do you think I did? Google comic book shop. I've been to a lot of different comic book shops in Chicago, but I have never been to Challenger Comics, which I'm, if I'm not mistaken, you are familiar with it very well.
I've been to many events. I go there many a times, and I love it.
So this is the pickup that I got there is something called 80 After Death, Book 1. This is by Scott Snyder, and it was illustrated by Jeff Lemire. Now, I knew this was coming out.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, it wasn't on my pull list. This is a ginormous book, and this was only $5.99. It was magazine size. I've got
the magazine comics.
I am today, it seems like it. Set in a future with a genetic cure for death has been found. Years after discovery, one man starts to question everything, leading him on a mind-bending journey that will bring him face-to-face with his past and his own mortality. The reason I didn't talk about this in the spoiler section is, well, two reasons. Number one, I didn't finish it. Because there is just a ridiculous amount of words. What you get for $5.99 just blows my mind.
I remember seeing, oh boy.
Yeah, look at that. I mean, it basically...
Looks like you're reading a script.
I was just going to say, it starts off almost...
Wait, did Scott Snyder finish it, or you just put a script over?
Yeah, no shit, right? So this is one of three, so it is a miniseries. I'm definitely on board for all three issues.
Cool.
Jeff Lemire has a much different style artwork than we're used to. He has very much... It almost is like he did watercolor.
Yeah, this looks like his recent series, Plutona, which I gave big props to. I can see the... similarities.
But I think I got about halfway through this, and I know I'm paging through it for Anthony right now. And it fucking took me on this. I think I got about halfway done, and it is a fucking masterpiece of a
book. Already just by looking at this, I already want to go buy it. So
it just blew my mind. Oh, cool. I mean, I didn't know where this was going at all. I didn't know anything about this book. All I know is you see Scott Snyder and Jeff Lemire. For me, that's usually an automatic grab.
Yeah.
One of those guys would have to do something really bad in their personal life for me not to support their books. But look at this. I mean, you have a whole full page, magazine size page of like almost written like a novel.
I'm still convinced Scott Snyder just like here, just take this. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. There.
I know.
And that's all legible. That's all actual. Yes.
I read this.
It's a circle of words.
Yeah.
Not just words in a circle. It's just a circle formed out of words.
I mean, you have a legit story here. I mean, I'm paging through this like it's kindergarten right now.
I'm sold.
And I hate to just... Because you and I, for the most part, if we want something, we just buy it. We don't bitch at the price. Not too often. But I do have to make note of the $5.99 price tag.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean... This, honestly...
It seems like it should be $9.99.
Yes. This is a half-hour read.
Yeah.
I mean, this... If you want to do it right and you want to, like, read word for word and you want to take in all the art, this is a half hour. You have to make time for this.
I'm taking a picture of that cover as my reminder to tell Crimson Cull to get those for me.
So, Yeah. I got this there.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. It looks like it feels like
I mean,
that.
Even the cover, cover is like, oh, super thick.
Did you spill some Ecto Cooler on the inside?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay, that's just the name.
So, but yeah, I got that at Challengers Comics. And the last thing that I want to talk
Challengers.
About. Oh, by the way, I want to appreciate, you know something I appreciated with them? How clean the store is.
Yeah.
It's like, I know that sounds stupid, but
they're
clean
in representation and their outfits. They're very suited, yes. Depending on who is there.
There's
but
no garbage all over the place. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying literal garbage, but I mean, a lot of retail shops put something in every nook and cranny.
Yeah.
They do not.
It's a very well-organized theme with their red and white colors, and I've spent many hours at Challengers.
You are going to lose your shit now, because bro. I bought God Hates Astronauts, but there's something else that goes along with this.
Oh, fuck.
So, God Hates Astronauts follows the story of a group of incompetent, small-minded, super-powered narcissists called the Power Persons Five, who are hired by NASA to stop all farmers from launching themselves into space in homemade rocket ships. Unfortunately for NASA, the goal is scarcely even addressed in the book, focuses more on extramarital affairs, bank robbing owls, big, gross, swollen heads,
yep.
Ghost cowheads,
it's all in there.
Old-time boxers, tigers eating cheeseburgers in the Crab Nebula, buffalo judges, and tons of aggressive swearing.
Whew. I've got the King Tiger Eating a Cheeseburger exclusive pop figure, very limited.
What?
I bought it for, like, a lot of money.
Okay, you're going to have
from Ryan Brown.
You will show me that before you leave.
Yeah.
I think you did, and at the time, I probably didn't appreciate it. So, yeah but this is by Ryan Brown, and you're the one that got me on Furnace. Yes. Yep. And I didn't know anything about it, and I read it. That was the ad-libbed comic book, I guess could call it, page a day, the improv.
Yeah, the improv comic.
Laughed my ass off, didn't make any fucking sense. There's a character on the cover of this that is in Burn Furnace. But yeah, I saw this and I'm like, I saw the tag. I'm like, it says Ex Libris Challengers Art, $15. And I'm like, $15? I'm like, it's $14.99 anyway. Signed and numbered by Ryan Brown. Do you know this was coming?
No.
Oh, yeah. So it is signed and fucking numbered by the creator of the book. I have number 96 of 200.
Nice.
And, yeah, he's got it. I'm assuming that must be his initials with the year that he did it, 2013.
Okay.
I don't know how many of these I have, but that was the only one that I saw.
So there's a loose print that's on the inside here.
Yeah. Okay. So I saw that and I was like, what? I'm like, they sold it for the same price that the actual trade was. Like, you think that they could have gotten a little bit more for
If
they wanted to. So I'm happy to have this in the collection. I read the first, I guess you could say, two issues of this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most fucking thing. Man, you thought Burn Furnace was, well, they're on the same level.
Yeah.
In terms
of
ridiculousness.
Yeah.
He's got a sense of humor that, like, connects with me, I guess you could say. Whereas he says stuff that I think I would say in my everyday life.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun to read that. It's kind of like, if I was creative, this is kind of how I would write.
Yeah.
But I'm not creative. I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah, you are the biggest POS.
Biggest piece of shit. So, but yeah, you've been talking about not only this guy, but you've been talking about God Hates Astronauts for a long time.
Yeah.
It's one of the first things we talked about. Besides Vision.
Yeah, I've been a fan of that for 3 years now.
Is this still going on?
No. There might be like a second trade of that. Okay. Because this is the Image series, I believe.
Yes.
The Image version.
Yeah.
So yeah, it had ended, but I think we'll get more eventually. So.
Yeah, I know I saw our Burn Furnace guy somewhere. There's a burning tie somewhere in here that I
probably,
saw.
Probably, yeah.
So, holy shit, man. Challengers Comics, that place is legit.
I love it.
Yeah, so they actually had the Lion Cat stuffed cat there that I fucking pre-ordered that apparently I didn't get or something. Thought I pre-ordered it. I must not have. But they had it for like $50. I almost grabbed that too. I was going to, but I'm like, I'm like, maybe next time. So, yeah, there's a lot of shit, a lot of comics.
Right.
So,
I've got one more comic to talk about.
Good. Okay, sweet.
It's the heaviest comic I own. It's one comic.
I'm in the zone, so let's do this.
Starting in November of 2015, Deadpool started, their post-Secret Wars stuff started. in which Deadpool number one was coming out again. And I was off at Deadpool for a little while. I had followed, you know, I had met Brian Posehn, one of the writers for yep. Deadpool, for a couple years. I met him at Challengers Comics. And I had dropped off the book eventually where I have a lot of Deadpool. Over the years, I buy Deadpool for stretch. I kind of get a little bored with it, and then I stopped for a while, and you could just pick it up anytime again. I figure I'm like, all right, movie was awesome, just came out, I'll jump back, you know, it's a number one. But then I saw something very particular about the number one, is that they offered a variant cover for the same exact price called the Secret Comic Variant. I'm like, what the hell is that? And sure enough, for 21 issues, they were going to do a page on the cover that was going to be a brand new comic unrelated to the inside story, which is a continuous story as normal, but the cover was going to be its own individual page of a comic book called Deadpool's Secret Comic.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yep.
And while I've been reading the inside series since for the last 13 months, I hadn't been looking at the covers because I was waiting until it was wrapping up. And right here, I own all of the covers, yeah, which form basically a free comic.
Yeah.
So for buying Deadpool for the last 21 issues.
Free. I did air quotes for the people that are listening to this.
It is a free comic.
Because you paid for it too, though. I mean.
But the.
I know what you're saying.
If I bought all of these and another person just bought the regular comics, I have one more comic than
that. I see what you're saying.
Because the cover is a whole entire comic.
And you said it is not related to the story inside of the
Correct.
Book. Okay.
So the people
I'll
that
give
bought
it to you.
For all the people that bought those Deadpool comics, if I bought the same amount of comics
yes.
as the people who just bought the regular cover for the same price, I am one comic ahead of them.
All right.
Because right here is a stack, and I read them all last night in a row, and I posted a giant picture of all of them together on the social media for Comic Sake, so check that out. And I read it, and the general story is Deadpool is banished by Odin for doing something right on the first page. You see him get blasted and banished, and you kind of just see some weird stuff happening. He kind of falls back, and then he just falls here, and you're just like, okay, what happened? And then in the next one, you see him talking to the UPC code. On this front page, on the cover, he was banished to the insides of this UPC code.
What the fuck?
And as you go through, this UPC code
oh,
is a character.
Dude!
Yeah, he has...
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, this character is... He goes, I am UPCPO, Human Cash Register Relations, as in C-3PO, and that's why I read it like that. I am C-3PO, Human
yeah.
Cyborg Relations. And this is when Deadpool is, like, realizing he's trapped inside the UPC code. He's trying to kill this guy. He can't. He figures they're in the UPC code. They're in the comic shop right here.
What the fuck?
Looking out at people looking at comics because they're existing in the cover
yeah.
of Deadpool. In all of these books, you see the word Deadpool sprout, like the title's still on there. Even though you look at it being like, why is that cover ripped off? Deadpool is just very conveniently like written in different
sure.
spots. And basically, in order to get out of here, they have to go back in time, and they find themselves on classic Marvel covers. He's trapped in the Marvel cover universe,
yeah.
basically.
Wow.
And now he's in this like Rawhide Kid comic from like probably like
fucking
the 30s or 40s
yeah.
or something. Then he's on a classic Nick Fury Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which they make a joke at the writer, Jim Steranko. They make a joke about that. They go through, and he's battling himself through this, trying to get through this comic universe, and it is hilarious and amazing. He's interacting with the characters on other comic book covers, and it just constantly goes through. And I'll say this one thing here, that they find themselves on, here he goes, Deadpool goes, most covers promise things that never happen inside the comic. So he's holding a Starburst advertising that says, this is it, the one you've been waiting for, Deadpool kills Uncle Ben. Because that's something that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But it continues to go on, and it's fucking insane, and where it ends up is hilarious. And that is one giant comic book. They took like maybe two issues off, and I, as of today of the recording, I picked up the start of a brand new Secret Comic cover sequel in which I'm going to be collecting again.
So that is quite the payoff, actually.
Yeah.
I mean,
it is.
I can't believe that now I feel less judgmental about it because I was giving you shit about the free comic.
Yeah.
But the fact that it is the same price, pretty cool.
Yeah. You have the choice of just getting the regular cover like any old Joe and Schmuck, or you can just pay the same price and get eventually in the long run if you're dedicated to buying them.
Yeah.
And the book's been good. There's only been maybe two or three issues of Deadpool that were just like, all right, I didn't really care for that one.
Yeah.
But I'm buying Deadpool anyways. Why not get a free, unique comic on top of it? This proved that, I guess, regardless of the story inside, as long as they're doing this, I think I'm buying this anyways.
But is the writer of the book the same writer of that comic up on top, you think?
I think so. I think he's credited. I'm just going to pull off the top one. It's a different artist, because they call it... the variant covers... here we go. The Secret Comic variant, Jerry Duggan, who's writing, Brian Posehn isn't writing Deadpool right now. Jerry Duggan, yes. And then Scott Koblish, Guru FX, I think is probably the lettering or something. Joe Sabino, actually he's the letter. There's another separate team that's doing it, but Jerry Duggan, the writer of the Deadpool comic, is writing this story. And I have going to do research to see if it was Scott Kolbisch's idea or if it was Jerry Duggan's idea of being like, we should do this. And then he reached out to the Scott Kolbisch guy. But anyways,
it's a
genius, brilliant idea that could only exist with Deadpool when it comes to Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
I love the Secret Comic variant covers.
Oh, very nice.
That's a lot of comics.
Holy shit, man. That was a lot.
Yeah. And we still, that's pretty decent. We still have these
episodes
here. This is an exercise issue for this. A zero price.
Absolutely. Yeah, for the free price.
And the last little news bit that I read before we started recording is that Marguerite Bennett tweeted out that holy fucking shit. I think, you know, she swore. I don't know if those are the exact words.
Holy fucking shit.
But she goes, Animosity number one just went back for its fifth printing.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
So that's impressive.
Check out Animosity if you haven't.
I almost want to look to see how cool those covers are, too. They might be worth picking up. I don't know. So, but we got and we also have a Baby Got Back issues coming up at the end of the month here. That's my pick of the week.
Yes.
That's going to be the
month.
What's it?
Pick of the month.
Or pick of the month, yes. And that's, it's my turn. And I picked the first trade paperback of Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. And that's,
Saturday, December 31st, we're going to drop it. Right now, our newest one is Silver Surfer. We encourage you to reread or read for the first time. It's our book of the club. Hold on. Book of the month club.
Yeah, there we go.
You know we're getting at the end of it here.
Yeah.
Book of the month club, which we ask you to read along as well. We're picking these because they're our favorites. And then we do the podcast, complete spoilers, and go through. And you can tweet and email and all that kind of fun stuff to add in your thoughts, and we can share it on the show and expand the experience of loving these comics. So yeah, Saga Volume 1, issues 1 through 6, Saturday, December 31st. Bring in the new year with us and Saga.
And Saga, yeah.
So yeah, lots of comics. New comics, old comics, current comics, classic comics. We love talking about
future comics.
Future comics, oh yeah.
So we love it all, man. We love the comics.
Only for one reason.
And that reason
one
is...
one exact reason.
And that's for the for sake of sake.
Comics.
For Comics Sake on iTunes.
At For Comics Sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For Comics Sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
Music by Bicycle vs. Motor Vehicle. Please visit them online, soundcloud.com/BVSMV, as well as BVSMV.bandcamp.com. Dramatic sound effect by Digifish Music from freesound.org. And special thank you to our key grip, Brian Kraft.